Blog Talk Radio.
To the Eerie House Circus and Carnival, featuring your ringmaster, Crazy Dale Kane from Spook Show.
Good Lord. What have I wrought? Welcome, everyone, to Eerie House, and we are going to discuss today circuses and carnivals in horror films, and there's plenty to choose from. I mean, we're talking about going back to the silent days, one of the earliest films I recall is The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari takes place in a carnival. The somnambulist is portrayed on stage with the doctor, and obviously it was one of the great German expressionistic films of the 1920s. There's so many to choose from, and it's more than just scary clowns. I mean, those certainly prevail throughout these types of films, but there's many, many more that take place in and around circuses and carnivals. Which ones are your favorites? Well, we hope to find out. One of the most impactful films to me has to be Todd Browning's Freaks from 1932. It's about a circus troupe starring real people with challenges, and is the story of a very evil woman who's not one of the freak, as she tries to use one of the midgets and his wealth. Obviously, the rest of the troupe is not pleased because of their closeness. There is a certain brotherhood to a carnival or a circus, I think. People have a rough life. And if you've seen the film, you know what happens at the end. Let's not play spoiler. But there is a certain brotherhood that exists with carnival folk. And you don't want to cross them. Todd Browning did another great film in the silent era with Lon Chaney. It was called The Unknown. Now, Chaney plays an armless fella. And learned how to use his feet to pour drinks, light cigarettes, and all kinds of fun stuff. Lon Chaney was known to be a very talented person who really, really suffered for all his roles. Those are among my favorites in the early days of film that deal with carnivals and circuses. There's something creepy about the atmosphere. Have you ever gone to a carnival? This... Some of the people that run them are kind of, well, a little different, shall we say. We used to call them gypsies, probably not a politically correct term, but we used to call the carnival folk gypsies, and they were just different. But when I moved out to Wellington, Ohio, our county fair is very close to my home. And for a time, I was doing some DJ work, and I got to meet some of the carnival folk because they'd come into the bar after hours, have a good time, and, of course, there was a little division between the city folk and the carnival folk. I didn't feel that difference. I got to know some of those people, and they're just wonderful, regular folks who just live a different lifestyle. They're constantly on the move. I'm sure they make friends from place to place, but unfortunately they make enemies from place to place, too. And that kind of feeling was very evident in another horror film that I enjoyed very, very much. It's one of the Universal classics, The House of Frankenstein. If you've seen the movie and you recall, Karloff obtains the skeleton of Dracula and takes over a traveling show, and he has a hunchback, and there's the gypsy folk that that travel with the circus. It was more of a traveling show than a circus. They painted the gypsies, I think, in a nicer light in that film. They were good, happy-go-lucky folks, except for one bad person. Very beautiful dancing girl in that film, too. So definitely House of Frankenstein is a classic that I really, really enjoy. I have to say that one of my very, very favorites is not per se a horror film, but certainly different in its presentation. And I've mentioned it before when this show was under another name. And it's called The Seven Faces of Dr. Lowe. Now, in this film, Tony Randall plays several different roles. Seven, I think. I believe he plays all seven faces other than the snake. It's about a fella from China who comes to a small town in Kansas that's having difficulty with a gentleman trying to take over land rights. It's kind of a lesson film, really. Dr. Lowe is basically teaching the people of the town, in a very indirect way, how to stand up for what they believe in. Great special effects in that film. There's some stop-motion animation with the Loch Ness Monster who appears in it. According to the IMDb, Tony Randall plays not only Dr. Lowe, he plays the Abominable Snowman, Merlin the Magician, Apollonius of Tyana, Pan. He doesn't play the giant serpent. I don't know why they credit him here. That was actually a puppet that resembled Arthur O'Connell, who played the bad guy, Clint Stark. And he also plays a Medusa as well. He also plays himself in a brief cameo in the film. He's seen in a crowd watching the circus near the end of the film. And one of my very favorite quotes of all time, movie quotes of all time, happens in the film. Dr. Lowe meets a young boy who becomes enamored of the circus, like all young boys. He wants to run away and join the circus, and Dr. Lowe, of course, doesn't think it's right for the little boy to do so, and he tries to reach to him. And he says, "Mike, let me tell you something. The whole world is a circus if you know how to look at it. The way the sun goes down when you're tired, comes up when you want to be on the move, that's real magic. The way a leaf grows, the song of the birds, the way the desert looks at night, with the moon embracing it. Oh, my boy, that's circus enough for anyone. Every time you watch a rainbow and feel wonder in your heart, every time you pick up a handful of dust and see not the dust, but a mystery, a marvel there in your hand. Every time you stop and think, I'm alive, and being alive is fantastic. Every time such a thing happens, you're part of the circus of Dr. Lowe." And the young boy says, "I don't understand." And Dr. Lowe says, "Neither do I." A great film moment for me. In particular, my daughter watched it with me, and she fell in love with the movie. In fact, she inscribed a great portion of that speech onto a rock. And she's kept it to this very day. Great, great movie. Want to say hi to some folks who are listening in today. Thank you so much. Andy Wilson, also known as Horror Fan Addict. David Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie. Evil Annie Ruppert. And guest 768, the mysterious guest number 768. And if you folks want to join in on the conversation, don't hesitate. Punch your buttons very carefully on your phone and dial 646-378-0264. And I said dial. Isn't that odd? I think I've just given away my age. No one dials anymore. You press buttons. But do that carefully and call in and talk about your favorite carnivals and circuses and movies. What's your favorite, huh? You can tell me in the chat if you don't feel like calling. There's just so many to choose from. Almost any clown film. I liked Herc Harvey's Carnival of Souls from 1962. It was a very odd film. It seemed almost like a an extended Twilight Zone in the way the film ended. Again, I don't want to play spoiler, but the carnival is really creepy. There's it's a very atmospheric film. The music from it's great, I thought, by some relatively unknown performers. But it's a movie in which a girl is in an auto accident, and throughout the film, she's haunted by these figures. Goes to a town of which there's a carnival, and she has some really interesting carnival experiences in the film. You don't want to miss that one. It's public domain, and a lot of horror hosts like to present that one to the to their viewers. Don't miss it if you get a chance. See Carnival of Souls from 1962 in black and glorious black and white. How can we forget Vampire Circus from 1972? It's led by a gypsy woman and her dwarf companion, and there's basically a whole lot of vampires. I don't have a whole lot to say about it. It's on my must-watch list, but I've seen some great pictures from it, and it looks pretty bloody. One of those from the 70s I just haven't gotten around to seeing yet. Waxwork from 1988, another very good film. A group of college students get into this creepy carnival where they're picked off one at a time. And the twist here is there's different genres mixed in with the wax figures. There's a werewolf, a vampire, and even a Phantom of the Opera type looking character. And they're brought to life by voodoo magic. Pretty unusual approach, I think. Another on my must watch list. I haven't seen it. If you've seen this, you got to call me and talk to me about it. It's called The Last Circus from 2010. And this great little website here called BuzzFeed Entertainment suggests that it's probably the only horror film you'll ever see set in the Spanish Civil War era, with homicidal clowns and graphic violence, and it's an adult film, so we wouldn't want our younger audiences seeing that one. Not so much for the violence, but there's naughty bits in it, so we don't want the kids necessarily to. They have to see something like that. Not cool. We have a caller, and I bet I know who this is. Welcome to Eerie House.
And you do know who this is. Hey, Dale.
It's Weirdness, Really Bad Movies Finest, David Binkley. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling me the finest. I'm sure we got some ladies on there that would kind of disagree with that, but that's okay. Yeah, I've been enjoying, especially talking about some of the silence about the circus films and the freaks. You know, when you think of the freaks, though, you got to take a look at the Elephant Man and how he was part of a sideshow circus or a band until a surgeon pulled him out.
Wasn't he with P.T. Barnum for a short
era.
Time?
What's that?
Wasn't the Elephant Man with P.T. Barnum for a time?
He may have been in the real world, yeah. And actually, sideshows, in a sense, what they were doing, that were really kind of the first museums we had in this country. They were traveling, and they were up there. My brother, who's into museum curating and displays and things like that, he credits P.T. Barnum with being really one of the first, even though he had crazy displays and people that he had on there, but they were the sideshow freaks were part of a museum. Matter of fact, when you look at the early film Murder at the Museum, it wasn't at a museum like what we would think of today as a museum, but basically it was kind of a sideshow freak show, and that was the movie Murder at the Museum.
You bring up a really, really good point. Historically, I don't think people were paying a lot of attention to the human oddities and the what unchallenged people would consider strange or unusual until the sideshows. That's a very, very good point.
And it was really the uniqueness of the people that brought ordinary people in to view this, to drew them in. They'd never seen or heard of anything like that.
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine in this day and age with the you know, with the internet and, you know, instant information at your fingertips, the kind of excitement that would build for the for a show like that coming to your small town or even a large town that where you just don't experience those types of things. And it's easy to see how, for me at least, to imagine how popular those things could become. I mean, and it wasn't just the common man. A lot of wealthy and influential people were drawn to these types of shows.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up to see when, you know, P.T. Barnum was around. But, you know, just think of all the entertainment that wasn't there. You know, not everybody even had radios back in the day. And you'd have to go to the movie house or something like that. Other than that, there wasn't, for most individuals who lived out in rural America, there was really no entertainment unless you had one of these traveling shows or circuses or something like that that came to your town. That was,
sure,
you know, an evangelist or something like that. Again, that was a show. That wasn't just somebody spouting religion. That was a show.
Yeah, very vaudevillian in nature, to be sure. I mean, you did have some traveling shows with dancing and singing and other forms of entertainment, doing plays. But again, I think very early on, these kind of unusual shows of the unusual were also very early on as well, especially in American history. And it's funny how this type of thing, just the interest in this type of thing, does not go away. American Horror Story was recently talked about on this show, again under a different title. But when they did the Freaks, that was all based around a circus. Andy Wilson, who's listening, brought up the television series Carnival is also, you know, set in and around a carnival and with carny folk.
There was one episode, especially the first basically humorous episode of the X-Files, where they went down to Florida, where all the carny people kind of reside during the off-season. And that was a tremendous episode of the X-Files.
I think that's in Jupiter, Florida, where the American Horror Story was set, yeah. A lot of the folks went down there to retire, and I can't remember if it's something I read or perhaps a special. It could have even been AMC did a show called Freak Show, and it was a reality-based show. There's a gentleman who's, you know, trying to keep those types of shows in the forefront. His isn't a traveling show as much, but he's had people either join his troupe or at least guest on his show, people with giantism, dwarfism. He had, in fact, I believe it's a direct relative from the original Lobster Boy, a gentleman who has the same, you know, challenges with his hands. Kind of hard to call them challenges, too, because like the great Lon Chaney, these people learned how to adapt. I mean, for Chaney, it was out of the necessity of a performance from a person who doesn't have challenges and just, you know, a great talent to contort his body. But these folks learned very well how to utilize what they had to make a living. And I think that's fantastic.
I think, you know, it's just amazing what Lon Chaney did in the silence and all the different roles and types of roles. And, you know, even look at what he, you know, I know it's not on your circuses, but, you know, as a freak, you know, look at the Hunchback of Notre Dame and his performance in there. It's just, he was just an unbelievable actor.
He wore like a 50-pound contrivance on his back. This guy really suffered for his art, and I believe his makeup bag is in the Smithsonian Institute, if I'm not mistaken. You know, his type will never come again where someone can, because of the unions that were created in Hollywood to protect people's jobs, understandably,
right.
It does prevent another person like Lon Chaney to come around who's not only a performer but an artist with, you know, with makeup and the different contrivances to play the Phantom of the Opera. Not a carnival or circus movie per se, but still, while we're discussing him, he put screws up in his nose to give him that skull-like appearance. He taped portions of his brow for Fu Manchu to make himself look more oriental. I mean, he did a lot of things to his body. He's played armless men like he did armless men as he did in The Unknown. He's played legless men. the guy was just fantastic, and a lot of his movies did, you know, take place in and around circuses and carnival, like Laugh Clown Laugh. And as I mentioned, The Unknown took place in a carnival as well. Do you have a favorite film that you've seen, David, that that takes place in and around the circuses, or?
I don't know if I have a favorite one. There's I do enjoy Something Wicked This Way Comes. Where
funny you should mention that. I did want to bring that one up.
Mr. Dark, basically, he owned the circus, and Jason Robards was absolutely tremendous. I don't know how many roles he had after that, but that wouldn't be a bad one to go out on. The Ray Bradbury.
Something Wicked This Way Comes derives from a Shakespeare quote. I'm not sure exactly where it comes from, but the quote goes, "By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. Open locks, whoever knocks." And then that title was used. the expression "something wicked this way comes" is was used as the title of a Ray Bradbury story that the movie was about.
And, better watch until your education is showing again.
Well, I've done some reading, and you always got to do some cramming before you do a radio show if you want to talk about these kind of things. So, you know, I will confess to doing some cramming today. I mean, I love Bradbury, but there's just so much to know about these genres. It doesn't hurt to relearn some of the things you might have forgotten over the years.
Yeah. We did show another show on our show that was somewhat based around a circus or circus performers and stuff, and that was The Fat Man, based on the radio play with J. Scott Smart, who saw us a start in the radio series. Very interesting in this, it's a very early performance of Julie London, Rock Hudson, Jane Meadows, and one of the very few appearances of Emmett Kelly Jr., or I'm sorry, of Emmett Kelly, the clown. And they were upset because he wouldn't put on his famous clown makeup. He put on clown makeup, but not of his famous clown.
Not as, yeah, the tramp clown. You know, there is something creepy or scary about circuses or carnivals. I remember going over an aunt's house at a very, very young age. I could have been 6, maybe 7. And as it was in those days, you know, people were more respectful of other people's property and so forth. So when you went over someone's house, if you weren't invited into any other particular room, you didn't go. Well, this aunt had a darkened room, and she had a small statue of Emmett Kelly. And that scared and there was in the dark in this room, and that thing scared the bee jabbers out of me. and I don't know why. I had never seen anything like that. I don't know if it was the shadow play, it was the fact that he was kind of a tramp-looking character, but he scared the heck out of me until I learned more about Emmett Kelly.
Yeah. Well, that also adds to the clown fear, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know why that is. Is that something that's been handed down from the ages? Is there something just innately creepy about clowns?
You know, some people it doesn't bother at all. I know my grandchildren were kind of freaked out the first time a clown approached them, because, you know, clowns not communicating usually through words. I think freaks some not just kids or people too. And if you watch the movie It, you'll never feel the same about clowns again.
Yeah. Well, that and Stephen King's It, which, by the way, they're remaking.
Why? I mean, okay.
Well, we always say that about remakes, and some very, very close associates of mine, I'll confess one of them is my wife, who's a huge, huge fan of Stephen King. She really, really loved Tim Curry's portrayal as Pennywise the Clown in It.
Oh, absolutely.
She's oddly excited for this remake. I think she's buying into the fact that it's going to be a film rather than a made-for-TV show. She saw the images that are being released now of the new actor that's playing the clown, and she's actually looking forward to it. Another is a dear friend. In fact, you met her last week at the Alfalfa's Pub reunion. Teresa, I don't know if you recall her, very dear friend and associate for some time. She too is looking forward to the remake of It.
I don't understand, because usually you don't make the story better. You can make special effects better, but you don't necessarily make the story better. That's why I wonder why always remake.
I was surprised to hear someone recently, as this topic came up, I was surprised to hear someone tell me they did not care for the actors in the television version of It, with a few exceptions. I liked them. I thought they were all well cast.
I thought they were, too. Some people just don't like John Boy.
Maybe. I love the transitions from the childhood era to the adult era, too. Certain nuances they had in their character, the way the one guy rubbed his chin and the way another fellow made certain comments and those
right.
transitions were very well done, I thought. Taking you from the past when they were first terrorized by the clown till he returned as when they were adults and hopefully finally defeated the evil entity, really. It wasn't so much a clown as an evil entity. He just
right.
took the appearance of something that people naturally have a fear of.
Yeah. So I may look into it, but, there's not a lot of remakes I jump all over. I just don't.
I'm not a fan.
Like Planet of the Apes. How many times have they redone that now? And none of them were really better or more shocking than the original Rod Serling script.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mentioned also previously Planet of the Apes. I read the novel by Pierre Boulle, and it was very, very peculiar. It was certainly different than the Charlton Heston movie version, and it was kind of a surprise ending to the book. The book was presented as if two people had found a note in a bottle in space, much like a sailor would put a note in a bottle.
Right.
And at the end, they reveal the characters saying, "Oh, that's ridiculous! Who ever heard of human beings talking?"
Well, and you can't leave without the killer clowns mentioning killer clowns from outer space.
Yeah, absolutely. It has a cute little song in it, too. They're not the best makeup in the world in that film, but entertaining nonetheless. Well, with about a minute and maybe 20 seconds to go here in the live portion of the show, I do want to mention that it'll be a few more weeks, but Eerie House will be releasing some kind of Eerie House television. It's going to be a change from anything you've seen in the past, but I still want to be able to present classic horror television and movies, and horror hosts that want to participate in my shows are certainly welcome to do so, and encourage submissions for that. Got a couple people on board already, and we'll see what happens. But the main thing is getting the horrors out for the people that love to watch them. Go to a carnival near you. It's not going to be the same. There was one in Brook Park where my wife grew up, and she remembers seeing some of the freak shows, which were pretty much limited to that museum atmosphere that you referenced earlier, with figures like the Mermaid Boy. But you did have people with elephantitis, and you had your geeks that would pound nails up their nose and things like that to thrill and scare the audiences. So with 10 seconds left, thanks for listening to Erie House Radio, and thank you, Dave, for calling. If you like, stick around for a bit in the after party. Thanks for listening to Erie House Radio. Bump.
Bump. You know, when I went to some of those carnival things, they had things like that and the bearded lady and things like that. But I don't know how much of that where we were was real. You know, I don't know how much that was real and how much might have been makeup, or maybe they were real. I don't know. I guess I didn't really believe it.
Well, we always had that one aunt that had a bit more facial hair than she should have. So,
that I can understand. Yes. There's always the mustache, but the beard, and you know, it wasn't just that. It was some of the other, the dog boy and things like that that they had is, you know.
Yeah, some of those were very, very suspect, but the geeks seemed real, and by geeks, obviously you couldn't bite a chicken's head off anymore, which was the original, I think, meaning for the geek, but some of the the blockheads is what actually I should be calling them, the folks that would ram nails in their nose and pierce themselves in all kinds of crazy places. I think those were authentic, the ones that I saw as a youth. I think the Geauga County Fair was here in Ohio was one of the latest runs I saw where there were still live freak shows. I remember seeing those yet going even into the early 80s. There was a lady with elephantitis, you know, pretty deformed in her lower extremities.
Would displaying that be considered demeaning and politically incorrect today, you think?
Oh, absolutely. People would be whining and complaining. And I have mixed feelings about it because I think we should be sensitive to anybody with any kind of a challenge. I mean, you see some pretty stunning images on the internet now.
Right.
But at the same time, if you talk to some of the people that have had challenges, and even people like dwarves, they've got the, what's that one show? It's on Discovery, which amazing.
Little People, Big World or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, they're at least they're getting paid.
They're not
And they're not fools. They know they're being exploited to a degree. But if they're getting paid a fair share and they're comfortable with it, I mean, they're free to say, you know, no, I'm not getting a free, you know, I'm not getting the lion's share. I'm not, you know, whatever. And they can walk and not do it.
Right.
They're getting paid.
Yeah.
I knew a young lady. I used to run a telemarketing room for a mortgage company. Okay. And maybe 55, 100 years ago, she might very well have been in a circus. She had some birth issues compounded by a car accident. I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing at the irony
right.
of it.
Right.
The girl had stumps for legs. She had a very deformed arms. But she could talk to people sincerely. Uh-huh. And she made good money at what she was doing. But the thing that impressed me the most about her is she drove herself to work. She had special controls. One of her arms was not too badly disfigured, okay? She had special controls in her car. It was I believe it was a Trans Am. And not a new one, you know, she would drive herself to work, and I would remember I would run down, when I'd see her coming out the window at work, I'd run down from the second floor, burst out to her car, and try to help her pull her wheelchair out of the backseat of the car, and she would get mad as hell at me.
Yeah, I have a friend with no big legs, and he gets himself around, and he has hand controls in his car, and you can't help once he fell down, and I said, how can I help you? He says, don't help me, I know how to do this. I could probably hurt him more than what he would have, you know, done by you know, helping himself. But you have this initial urge to help.
Yeah, and she would actually get angry with me and say, no, G-D-it, I want to do this myself. And another very comical story. I went to visit her at her house one day, really her apartment, and she had a young son, late teens at the time, who did not have any outward birth challenges, and he was getting real smart with his mother. And for some reason, amazingly enough, I mean, he lived with this woman his whole life, thought he was at a safe distance from her and was really giving her some lip. And she got up on those stumps and grabbed a stick and went after that kid. And I don't mean to laugh. And again, it's funny because this kid thought he was getting away with something that and being disrespectful when he really, to someone with those challenges to go through what she went through to raise a child, you know what I mean? It was comical to see his get his comeuppance. And it's not like it was something crazy violent or anything like that. Don't get the wrong idea at all.
Right.
But it was fun to see. And heartwarming at the same time.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, it was a very good show, Dale.
Well, thank you. Thanks for bailing me out there. I felt like, I certainly had enough material prepared to talk about all these films more in depth.
There were a couple there that I did want to bring up slightly that you hadn't gotten to yet. And,
it's always like that. It was like that with my former partner. At the end of every show, Halloween Jack, the great Halloween Jack, we would always reminisce about, oh, God, there's so much more we could have talked about. There's films like Vampire Circus we didn't get to, and there's so many, even in the non-horror genre. Heck, we brought up Charlton Heston earlier. The Greatest Show on Earth was a very entertaining film.
Yep.
And, when
I brought up The Fat Man, at the same time Emmett Kelly was filming this in black and white, he was over filming The Greatest Show on Earth in color. On the next lot.
Oh,
like I said,
kidding.
He only did a handful of movies, and two of them he filmed at the exact same time. So.
And there was something I forgot to mention when I brought up The Unknown with Lon Chaney Sr. I think that film was, it's either 26 or 27, it escapes me now, 1926 or 27. Do you know who the female lead was in that?
No.
A very, very young Joan Crawford.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she
and now
got
that's,
to play.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. Well, I think it's quite likely before she became who she became later in life. You know what I mean? I think in part her own idiosyncrasies as well as the Hollywood lifestyle and probably scads and scads of alcohol had a lot to do.
Well, and there is so much ego that comes with it when they keep telling you that you're the greatest, you're the greatest, you're the greatest, I think, you know? That at some point you tend to believe it, and when you're not the greatest anymore, it's very hard to accept.
Well,
I think we've
seen
that in a
lot
of and I think I think there are more problems with women having that lost that than the men, but
Well, there's different ways to look at that, too, though. I mean, it all depends on, I think, how one views the self, too. I've known some very, very talented people who seem to constantly look over their shoulder, and I could never understand that because they were so talented. I could see it, as you mentioned, with the ladies, particularly if they were initially became popular because of their looks, because they were sex symbols.
Right.
But there are people who transcended that in as they grew older. People like Meryl Streep, people like Betty Davis. I mean, she
right.
was no looker when she did The Nanny, but did she lose any of her skills? Absolutely not.
No.
And maybe I'm only saying this because I'm getting older. There's some older ladies that look pretty darn hot. You know what I mean?
You know,
sure, do they have the...
I have a friend who says, you know, Dave, he's a little bit older than me. He says, every year you get older, you're going to find more good-looking women.
and maybe that's the way it was meant to be, you know. When you get older, your eyesight starts going.
it's always last call,
good, right?
That's right. It helps for a long marriage, right? Honey, you look the same as you always did. And you just edit out the part that my eyes are shot, you know, whatever. Oh, gosh. Another fun movie was Funhouse. That was a Tobe Hooper movie. Have you ever seen the Funhouse?
I'm off the top of my head, no.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, I would say no.
I had to cheat and look here on the internet. I can't remember. I can't believe it was from 1981. That might be the last time I saw it in the theater. But there's a killer who dresses up kind of like the Frankenstein monster with a Frankenstein-type mask. There's another hideous, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of a vampire creature. It had sharp teeth and it looks like it was split down the middle in his head. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen it, but it's
now that you mentioned it, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
A little strange.
Right around the time
that really did freak me out.
Which one?
Carnival of Souls.
It freaked you out?
Yeah, it did. I just thought it was a really oddly done movie.
Yeah, it was. It was. It's definitely like, I don't know, it has a funny feel to it.
It does. The entire feel, you know, had like hair on the back of my neck. So throughout most.
How old would you say you were when you first saw it?
Probably 40.
Yeah, I saw it later in life too. I might have even been a little bit older than that, but yet and still, you know, it just had a creepy feel for it, and
it does. It definitely has.
I have to
feel.
Admit, I was surprised by the ending.
I was.
Towards the end, I was getting a little suspicious, but it still shocked me. Oh, okay, so that's what it was. it all makes sense now.
Makes sense, sort of. Okay.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
I was working in an office. Oh, this is close to 10 years now ago. It was a little before my heart attack, and I had. I used to listen to music by shoving a disc in the computer and playing it real low so you couldn't hear it beyond my own cube,
right.
So I thought.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I did it because someone who overheard it later became kind of a friend through it. I had the soundtrack from Carnival of Souls, and sure enough, this head pops up and he goes, "Carnival of Souls!" And I'm like, "Oh, what? Who the hell else knows this, you know?" And
yeah,
the guy who's a film buff, you know, he lives up here in the Cleveland area, and I was just shocked. I said, "Well, how did you come to know of this film?" Because I don't ever remember seeing it on television as a youth.
No.
I found it on the internet. You know, once I started doing the horror host thing, you know, I found out about it late in life. And here, I guess, in college, the college he went to, in one course, they did a piece on that. They actually studied the film, not just the music, of course, but you know, how it was put together and everything. And I just found that amazing and heartwarming too. Thank God for education, so that films like this are not forgotten, because the vast majority of youth don't have the patience for black and white, don't have the patience for the character development we see in the old films. They want action, action, action.
Yeah. Hey, have you done I'm sure you have, a show on television horror shows?
I did, but I want to do more. There's so many on besides,
you know, like
the anthology
shows. Even the anthology shows, you know, like The Outer Limits, and I don't mean Outer Limits as much, although they did some, but I mean like Night Gallery and Monsters and shows like that.
Coal Shack.
Coal Shack is my favorite. I've got both movies and the entire series on DVD.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've got a little less than a minute here in the after party, Dave, so if we get cut off suddenly like last week,
absolutely.
I apologize. I can do that next week if you like. If you have a chance, call in again, and I'll go ahead and do television shows. Why not?
As far as I know, I don't have anything going on, so I'll be sure to be there. I'll even maybe call a little early.
Excellent. Do that, and I'll